coming to you from deep inside the bowels of a great big empty. Get ready for another episode of The Home Defense Show with Skip Coriel.
Hello, American families. Welcome to this week's episode of The Home Defense Show. I'm your host, Skip Coriel. And if you love your family, care about them deeply, and want to learn how to protect them in every facet of your life, then you've come to the right place. Folks, we've got a great show for you today. We are going to have a man named Tom Knighton on the show in segments 2 and 3. Tom Knighton, he's one of the authors from BearingArms.com. You know, every week we read articles from BearingArms.com, and they're just awesome. And Tom writes most of those articles. There's a little author's bio of Tom here. Tom Knighton is a Navy veteran, a former newspaperman, a novelist, and a blogger and lifetime shooter. He lives with his family in Southwest Georgia. When I got to researching Tom, I didn't realize how much we had in common. You know, he's a dad, he's a husband, but he's also a novelist, which of course I am as well. And as luck would have it, he writes apocalyptic fiction just like I do. And I just finished reading his first novel called After the Blast, Soldiers of New Eden, Book 1. And, you know, it was pretty good. So I went ahead and I bought the second one, Bloody Eden. And I'm working on that one right now. So I think we're going to have a really good conversation with Mr. Knighton. I'm very interested in learning more about BearingArms.com. I've been reading those articles for so long now. And it will be fun to find out about the actual author. All right, what's been going on in my life? Well, as you know, I think we can safely say that summer is about over here. You know, summer is in its final death throes. We still have 80-degree weather up here in Michigan, southern Michigan. But at night, it's dipping down into the 50s. And I think last night it was 52 degrees was the low. You can just feel the air is different. It's a little more damp, and it's cool, and it feels good. I love autumn. I just hate what comes after it. But hey, I guess you got to take what you can get, and you know, fall is fall. A lot of good things about fall. We are canning food like crazy. In the spring, I plant the garden, right? And I go mushroom hunting. And then in the summer, I grow the food and I cut firewood. And boy, in August, that's when I start canning food. This past week, we've been doing a lot of wild grape juice and a lot of tomato sauce. This wild grape juice is just awesome. Let me give you a recipe. Wild grapes, you have to understand, are incredibly tart and acidic. That means that if you take a wild grape and just pop it into your mouth, you're going to make a face because they are extremely strong and tart and acidic, sour. These things are so acidic, you know, they will just melt right through your tongue. So what I do is, here's the recipe. You take 1 quart of wild grape juice. Then you take 1 quart of pear juice. You mix the two together. You add 1/4 cup of sugar. I use organic cane sugar. And then you mix it up really well. Oh, you have got, it's just a tiny bit sweet, but still tart as can be. And boy, you know, it's got to be good for you. It just has to be. It tastes fantastic. I love it. I just absolutely love it, and the kids love it. Sarah, my wife, to give you an idea of how tough this woman is, she drinks the wild sour grape juice straight. I don't know how she does it. I if it was me, it would probably just eat right through my intestines like a white phosphorus grenade. But for her, you know, she does it and she loves it, and hey, more power to her. It's almost hunting season. We're getting ready. We are getting ready. September 1st is when I start shooting my crossbow, getting that all sighted in and get practiced up. And I'll be going through and making sure my tree stands are all nice and ready. And I've got deer on the property. They are just waiting for me to put them down and eat them. All right, aside from that, kids are all healthy. I've been working terribly hard on The Blind Man's Rage. I'm up to about page 140 right now, and I just keep working away. The plot line is coming to me. It's being incubated like a little baby, and I will give birth over time. Hope to have that out October 1st. The opening day of bow season. That's my goal, but I'm going to have to hurry. All right, let's head on to the news here, because Mr. Knighton is going to be with us. Let's do an article by him on BearingArms.com. North Texas School Board approves armed teacher plan. You know, God bless Texas. You know, whatever else you want to say about them, hey, you can't deny they're big. And you can't deny that they love their guns. If you're going to be serious about combating school shootings, there are a number of things that probably need to be done. Heightened security is a definite priority, but one proposal that many on the right are favoring is arming teachers so they can defend themselves and, by extension, their students. You got that right. I'm all on board with that one. Arming teachers has certainly been controversial, to say the least. Many are outraged at the mere suggestion of it. I think it's only because they're snowflake wussies. I mean, they're scared to death of guns, or at least they say that they are, but I don't know. There comes a point where you got to stand up, right? In the immortal words of the Duke, John Wayne, a man's got to do what a man's got to do. And you know what? When someone comes into the school and starts killing people, what's a man got to do? You got to kill him. However, that hasn't stopped a number of states and school districts from approving such a plan. Now, a North Texas school district has joined their number. Employees of Paradise Intermediate School District. Paradise, I like the sound of that. You know, there's a Paradise, Michigan, way up in on Lake Superior in the Upper Peninsula. I don't think it's Paradise about December, or actually probably more like November through May. Pretty cold up there. Employees of Paradise Intermediate School District, northwest of Eagle Mountain Lake, will be allowed to carry firearms following the Monday vote, District Superintendent Paul Uttle said. Uttle said for an employee to carry a gun on campus, he or she would already need to possess a concealed carry license and then pass the district's training program. It's a decision we wish we did not have to make, but in light of recent activities across the country, the board thought it was necessary to protect our students and staff, Uttle said. You know, amen to that, Mr. Uttle. He's got it right. It's common sense. I don't understand why more schools don't get it. I get wishing you didn't have to make such a decision, but they did, and it was the right one. Teachers are sitting ducks in the event of a mass shooting, and they're disarmed as a matter of law in many cases, actually in most cases. I get that not every teacher wants to carry a gun, especially as, unlike police officers, it's not an expected part of the job. You know, maybe it should be an expected part of the job. My daughter, you know, 23 years old, she's a middle school teacher. She loves her job. She didn't become a teacher so that she could, you know, carry a gun in school and try and protect the kids. But she does have a protective instinct, you know, thanks to yours truly, Daddy. That would be me. So you know what? I think if they legalized it, I think I could talk her into carrying a gun in school. And she's got the warrior mindset that she could actually do what has to be done. All right. The last thing I want to see is every teacher be required to carry a firearm as part of their job. In fact, I suspect no one wants to see that. but I do take issue with teachers being required to be disarmed in a place which is known to be a target for mass shooting. Teachers in the Paradise Intermediate School District are going to have a choice. If they don't want to carry, they don't have to. If they do, they can, and that's what's so blasted important here. And you know what? They're going to actually give them training as well. I think good idea to get trained, especially if you're going to be carrying in a highly populated environment like a school. You got to know when to shoot, when not to shoot, how to shoot. You have to avoid collateral damage, all that good stuff. You need good sound tactics and a skill set. You got to be a good shot. It's about choice. It's about having the option to carry a gun to protect yourself in the unlikely event that some maniac tries to shoot up your school. Sooner or later, one of these jack wagons will try it and get shot by a teacher before he can kill a bunch of kids, and we'll be proven right. We'll have all the proof we need that arming school teachers works. You know, the far left, they're so big on choice. You know, when it comes to killing millions upon millions of unborn babies, hey, it's a woman's choice. But a teacher can't choose to protect themselves and their students in a school? I don't buy that. They're not being consistent. But there will also be a lot of shootings that won't happen because the jack wagon won't know who is carrying a gun or if he can kill a lot of people before he's taken out. So he'll try and find some other way to be famous. That's a win for everyone as well. But that won't show up in the news or in stats. Yeah, how would you measure something like that? You know, how do you measure how many times something didn't happen? You can't do it. Every school system that embraces armed teachers is a school district that is keeping their students safe from maniacs looking for infamy. I agree wholeheartedly on this one. Boy, I wish we could get something like this going in Michigan. I really, really wish that we would. I mean, the Michigan governor's race, remember, vote for Bill Schuette. He's our current attorney general. He's running for governor against a very liberal, anti-gun Democrat. Folks, you got to get out there and you got to vote campaign for Bill Schuette because he will get the job done. He becomes governor and you will see armed, trained, responsible adults in our school system and every other pistol-free zone in Michigan. I've just got a good feeling about this. I'm going out on a limb here, but we need to get Bill Schuette elected so that he can, you know, sign some common sense gun laws into effect here. Well, all right, folks, we just got time for the one article this morning, but we're going to be talking all about BearingArms.com as soon as we get Mr. Tom Knighton on the phone here. He will tell us all about BearingArms.com, his writing, his novels, and we're going to have a good time. Now, we have got a two-minute break coming up here. During that two-minute break, I want you to go ahead and check out my novels, The God Virus, The Shadow Militia, The Saracen Tide. Go to Amazon.com, check that out. And then while you're there, check out Civilian Combat, the concealed carry book. Ah, and not to be self-grandizing, also check out Mr. Tom Knighton's book. Go to Amazon and just do a search on After the Blast. You can get that on Kindle or paperback. Okay, while we're away, go ahead and check out our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical. See what they can do to help your family. If you have to use legal deadly force to protect yourself, and then go to elitefirearms.us, see what Larry Jackson can do to help your family choose the right firearm to protect you and the ones you love. Okay, when we come back again, Mr. Tom Knighton from BearingArms.com. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
My name is Siege Coriel. Welcome to the Home Defense Show with my dad, Skip Coriel. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Today we are speaking with Tom Knighton, an author, a novelist, a writer at BearingArms.com. Tom, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, Tom, you are from Southwest Georgia. Is there anyone else living with you there in Southwest Georgia, or is it just you?
Yeah, I've got my wife and two kids down here with me. Okay. And a cat that seems to think that she's runs the house, of course.
Yeah, well.
Cats do that.
Well, the nice thing about cats is you can push them out of the way with your leg. You can't do that with a Great Dane.
No. I used to have a St. Bernard that thought he was a lap dog.
Yeah.
Didn't work well.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, Tom, I'm up here in Michigan, in lower Michigan. You know, the more I read about you online on your Facebook page and whatnot, I come to realize that you and I, we really have a lot in common. We've never met, but I'm glad that we're meeting now. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about all things Tom Knighton.
Oh, man, the one thing I hate talking about the most is myself. let's see. Well, like I said, I'm a husband and a father. I'm a Navy veteran. I was a Navy corpsman. I'm a novelist, like you said. I'm a political writer, political blogger, to be specific. I take no shame in the term blogger. I see it's kind of the future thing. I'm also, as far as I can tell, the first blogger to ever buy a newspaper. I actually owned a newspaper for a little while, and I proved successfully that print is dead.
Well,
at
great.
Least in my case, it died pretty quickly. But,
yeah.
You know, I gave it a try, so... I've been a business owner, entrepreneur, all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm one
sure.
of those people who's never happy with just one thing.
Well, actually, that's another thing we have in common because what I've got the Home Defense Show podcast. I co-host Frontlines of Freedom. We've got to get you on Frontlines of Freedom. That's the largest military talk show in the country.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll talk to you later about that. And then, of course, a novelist and, you know, writer. Publisher, all of that stuff. But Tom, tell me a little bit about Navy corpsmen, because, you know, as a Marine Corps veteran, corpsmen are always near and dear to Marines' hearts. So tell me about your military service.
Sure. I went in shortly after the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually a senior in high school when the Gulf War began and ended. Pretty proud of my country. Got out of high school, went to college because that's just what you did.
Yeah.
And after my first year, I was on the verge of being kicked out, not because I wasn't smart enough, but because they had this annoying habit of expecting me to actually show up for class.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was all on me, and I was like, you know, I need to do some growing up.
Right.
And so I dropped out of school. Went ahead and dropped out of school before I even talked to my parents about it. I told them what I had done. I told them why I did it, and I'm like, I'm going in the military. You know, at that point, I wasn't sure what branch. I'm like, you know, my mom was, you know, she was an old hippie, you know, very anti-war, and
oh,
she was really not happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad was a Navy Seabee.
Oh, okay.
And a Vietnam veteran. So the only thing my dad said was, talk to everybody. Talked to all the branches. He did say leave out Marines, but I talked to the Marines anyway.
it was yeah. Probably good advice, Tom.
I talked to all the branches, you know, recruiters, and the Navy recruiter was just the one who didn't try to BS me about how great it was.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, he was obviously very happy to be in the Navy, and he took a lot of pride in being in the Navy, but he didn't seem to make it like, oh, yeah, it's the greatest, it's easy, you know. Instead, he kind of appealed to that liking of a challenge, kind of like the Marine Corps does in their commercials, to be honest with you.
Right, yeah.
You know, he's talked about, you know, if you're on a ship and you're deployed, he's like, that's 6 months. He's like, you can handle 6 months. I mean, it's just 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, but then he was honest. He says, now, if we go to war, that goes out the window.
Yeah.
And I respected that because the next person I spoke to was an Army recruiter, and he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And it made it like I'd be a sergeant no time flat, you know, but he couldn't put it in a contract. He couldn't put it in writing. And so I weighed, you know, all the branches, and I'm like, okay, well, I think Navy's probably the best, but what do I want to do? And I had done a lot of first aid training and Boy Scouts and all this other stuff, and my dad, you know, was like, you know, I think you've got the makings of a good corpsman. My mom's side of the family, my mom was a Marine brat. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a Marine warrant officer. And I realized if I went corpsman, I could keep peace in the family.
Yeah.
Because the Marines don't get a whole claim on me, but they get a partial. Mm-hmm. And the Navy still has a claim. I'm like, this is a safe way to go. And honestly, I really, be perfectly blunt, I wanted to be a door kicker. I didn't really want to be in the rear with the gear. I didn't want that. If we went to war, I wanted to fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just had this wiring in my head that said I didn't necessarily want to go to war, but it was one of those, I just didn't feel right, the idea of being safe on a ship or in a hospital or somewhere else away from where people are being hurt.
Yeah.
I felt like I had a duty to be in the best position I could be in to maybe do some good in the war.
Yeah.
I got out before there really was a war. I was in during Black Hawk Down and, you know, our involvement in Bosnia. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was willing.
Yeah.
And was ready, but I had a lot of pride in being a Navy corpsman.
Yeah.
For people who aren't familiar, Navy corpsman is the medical rating within the United States Navy, but like you said, we provide medical care for the Marine Corps, too.
Yeah. Well, you're the guy who runs out there under fire and tries to drag our butt out of there or stick an IV in our arm and try to save our life till you can get us back to a hospital.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories about a corpsman took place during World War II in the Solomon Islands. A couple of Marines came under fire. Corpsman comes. You know, the Marines are wounded. He grabs the first Marine. He picks him up, starts carrying him. He's taking rounds. He's being shot, you know, and he drops the first Marine in an artillery crater.
Mm-hmm.
Decent cover. He goes back, wounded, to grab the second Marine, carrying this wounded Marine, taking more fire, gets the second Marine into the hole, and collapses dead.
Oh, gosh.
And one of the Marines wrote on the back of the corpsman's shirt, "Where angels and Marines fear to tread, there you'll find a corpsman dead."
Yeah.
And I'm like, I read that, and I'm like, I was one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm in awe that I have a brotherhood with somebody who was like that. And this is a guy we don't know. This isn't, you know, a famous corpsman. This isn't a Medal of Honor winner. This is some anonymous corpsman. I mean, obviously someone knows his name, but I don't. And I'm in complete awe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, I can relate to all of that. I mean, I kind of wanted to be a bit of a door kicker myself, so I went in the Marines. But I was in peacetime, 1975 to 1981. So, you know, peacetime.
Yeah.
For most of my tour. But, well, hey, thank you very much for your service, Tom. I appreciate that very much. And thanks for taking care of my fellow Marines. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I never got a chance to serve with Marines, unfortunately. That was where I wanted to go, but other things.
Yeah, well.
Never had the chance.
Well, as social personalities, we're a little overrated. Sometimes we don't work and play well with others. But
I don't either.
Okay.
That's why I figured I would have been a good fit.
Okay. All right. Hey, Tom, I finished, your very first novel, I really liked it. It's called After the Blast. I got it on Amazon on Kindle, and it was a good read. And you know, I started the second one called Bloody Eden. Got one chapter into that, and I'm really enjoying your apocalyptic adventure. But you've done other stuff too. Talk about we got about 4 minutes in this segment. Talk about, you know, your apocalyptic adventures, your need to write, you know, all of that stuff. Why is it so important to you?
Oh, well, to me, it's writing's just what I do. I mean, I don't really know how to do anything. Back when I was a kid in school, anytime we had some free time in school, I was writing stories. It's just something kind of encoded in my DNA, I guess. I don't really know how to not write. The times I've gone where I didn't write something, I felt completely lost.
Yeah.
And I, you know, wrote After the Blast. It actually started out as a short story. It was going to be a short story. I'm going to submit it to magazines. And, you know, I decided to go with the old nuclear war because I'm a child of the Cold War.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with that specter hanging over our heads. And I was like, well, what would happen if there was something else going on? What if something like that happened? And I came up with an idea of a guy who was a lot like me at the time, who, you know, tries to reconnect with his family after they're separated during a nuclear war. And, you know, suddenly you've got this guy who's a typical office drone, basically, trying to make his way on foot across the state of Georgia, which isn't a particularly small state.
Yeah.
And the kind of changes that someone would go through, not just physically, but mentally. And so
yeah.
That's where I went with that, and I really didn't plan on doing anything else, and I had a lot of people going, you need to continue this. So I'm like, okay, now I got to come up with a story. And then I came up with Bloody Eden.
Yeah. Yeah, well, from what I've read in the first chapter, it sounds like you got a really good start. You know, as an author, I mean, I've written 11 books of my own. I'm working on the 12th one right now. You know, I've seen a lot of people start their writing career, and I see how it starts, and I get to watch how they develop, and I can already see when you go from the first novel to the second novel, there's a big difference. I mean, in your writing style has gotten better. The character development is a little better. There's I think better humor in the second one so far. So I'm seeing a lot of good stuff that makes me want to keep on, you know, reading your work. Now, Tom, I know you've written other books as well. Tell us about your other written work.
Okay, sure. I consider myself first and foremost a science fiction novelist. You know, but the post-apocalyptic kind of falls under that. But I'm also love, you know, traditional science fiction, and one of my favorite science fiction TV shows was Firefly.
You know, I like that one.
And so I also enjoyed the TV show Leverage, where you got a bunch of criminals doing good, and I couldn't get any more of either of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to write my own stories. And the Tommy Riley Chronicles starts with the book, first novel is Sabercat, and it's about basically a rich kid who's trying to make it on his own. He's kind of cut off his family. But the vibe I was trying to go for was very Firefly-like. And a lot of people who didn't know that's what I was going for have made that comparison. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I love that series, Firefly. I've seen that. I think I watched it on Netflix or something. So that was pretty good stuff. How long have you been writing? How long ago did you write the first novel, After the Blast?
It was 4 or 5 years now, I think.
Okay.
Not all that long as writers go. Unfortunately, I would have more books out, except when you're writing nonfiction literally all day.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to shift your gears.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it was about 5 years ago. Actually, that's when it, After the Blast was published. It was probably written about 6 or 7 years ago. I wrote it and just sat on it for a while. And then somebody's like, you know, why don't you try independent, you know, going independent with it? Because nobody really cared about it. And so I gave it a shot, you know, threw it up in an afternoon, and it, next thing I know, it's hitting bestseller lists.
Oh, great. That's great.
It was on the Amazon Short Reads bestseller list ahead of several award-winning stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it is so hard to make a living, you know, at doing really any type of writing, you know, because most writers aren't good marketers. You know, we just want to write, and
yeah.
But we don't really know how to sell. And so, yeah, you're doing well to have any type of audience out there, and I know that you do, so that's great. Listen, Tom, we're about out of time for this segment now. We're going to go ahead and take a, you know, little 2-minute break here. When we come back, I'd like to talk more about BearingArms.com and some of your pro-gun writing. I think the listeners would appreciate that.
Appreciate.
Okay, we got a 2-minute break here. While we're away, go ahead and check out our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical, and then check out ElitePhirearms.us. And go to Amazon.com as well, and just do a search on Tom Knighton. That's K-N-I-G-H-T-O-N, Tom Knighton, in Amazon, and check out his stories as well. When we come back, we'll be discussing more with Tom Knighton from BearingArms.com. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Felix Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Always use guns safely and wisely. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if life was like the movies and the good guys always won? In today's world, if you're forced to use your firearm to protect yourself, you will need protection. Firearms Legal Protection is here for you. FLP provides you with seasoned, experienced attorneys that handle your criminal and civil matters as a result of you protecting yourself. FirearmsLegal.com provides its members with uncapped attorney's fees, bail bond protection, and coverage in all 50 states. We are not a reimbursement plan. You can access uncapped attorney's fees for as low as $10 a month. Firearms Legal members are provided with educational services, training videos, and access to our vast national attorney network. While you're protecting yourself, let Firearms Legal protect you.
Listen up, folks. This is important. There are plenty of legal protection services out there, but none will protect you as well as Firearms Legal Protection. This is the one I use and the only one I recommend. Visit firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and protect your family now.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. We are speaking with Tom Knighton, science fiction author, and also author from BearingArms.com. You know, Tom, we read articles from BearingArms.com. Most of them are written from you, from what I've seen. And we just do an analysis on the article. Tell us about BearingArms.com. What is it, and how did you get involved with it?
Sure. BearingArms.com is a pro-Second Amendment blog. It's owned by the same company that owns townhall.com, hotair.com, twitchy.com, Red State. So we're all part of that family.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded, I'm not really even sure when it was founded, but several years ago, has gotten a good reputation within the firearms community over the years.
Yeah.
I didn't do a lot to get that initial set there, to be honest with you. That falls onto the late, great Bob Owens, who was the editor and one of the primary contributors there for years and years and years before his untimely death.
Well,
I came on after him, so I never got to know Bob, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Tom, I noticed one of your recent articles, you were talking about a North Texas school board that had just voted to arm their teachers or allow their teachers to be armed. How do you feel about arming teachers personally?
Oh, I think it's, it makes perfect sense. When you're looking at armed attackers, and these school shooters are, when it boils down to it, it doesn't really matter what their motivation is. They're coming into a school with a gun wanting to kill people.
Right.
There needs to be an armed response. And even if you have a school resource officer on site, as we saw in Parkland, that doesn't guarantee anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we see, so it makes sense to let teachers be able to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's people like, well, they shouldn't have to focus on defending our children while they're, and I'm like, I'm talking about them being able to defend themselves. Ultimately, if they do that, they will defend our children.
Yeah.
That's the side effect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's them being able to use a gun to protect themselves from an attack or protect someone else because, a lot of inner city schools, you got gangs.
Yeah.
And they can then step in and protect. But, we make teachers go through all these background checks and all these things to make sure these are as good a people as we can get.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 100%. Nothing ever is. But we put them through a lot before they can even be a teacher. They go through background checks more intensive than, most people do, on par with what we get for a concealed carry permit. So if you're going to trust me to carry a gun anywhere else, and you're going to trust teachers with concealed carry permits to carry a gun anywhere else, why can't they carry it within those walls?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. What is it like there in your home state of Georgia as far as guns in school?
It's some places it's okay, some places it's not. I live in one of the more liberal areas in Georgia, unfortunately. Not a large area, thankfully, but, it's not an option here for teachers. Some other school districts in the state do allow it. I'm not 100% on that, to be honest with you, because there's been so many changes since Parkland of schools saying, yeah, let's do it, that it's almost impossible to keep up.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, in my opinion, because, like I said, that's the most effective way to make sure there's a gun when you need one.
Yeah. Tom, how do you select the articles that you're going to write about on bearing arms?
I look around. I've got, Google Alerts, and I've got a bunch of sites that I check their feeds, and I just look for whatever interests me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there are stories that, I'm like, okay, I don't really want to write this, but it has to be written because we need to cover it. But most of the time it's usually, okay, I want to write about this.
Yeah.
And luckily I'm very passionate about firearms in general and the Second Amendment, so I usually don't have a problem finding stuff.
Sure. Well, it's nice that you can have a job where you don't get assigned things. I mean, you just, okay, here, write about this or write about that. So that's kind of nice.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. One of my earlier professional blogging jobs was a place where you just took what came up. And I wrote a lot of stories that I really didn't care about.
Yeah.
And it was awful.
Yeah. I can relate to that because early in my career, I'm 60 years old now, but back when I was like 24 years old, right out of college, with an English degree, couldn't get a job. I ended up as a reporter for a small town newspaper. And boy, some of the township board meetings or village board meetings, they're just, oh gosh, talk about boring.
Oh yeah, I've had to sit through those because when I had my newspaper, I was a one-man shop, basically.
Yeah.
I had stringers here and there, but no one I could get to, I couldn't afford to pay anyone enough to sit through those things.
Yeah.
So I had to. And it was awful. I'm sitting here going, I bought a newspaper to do this.
Yes, that's right. And you're sitting there, and they're just boring the teeth right out of your head, and you're thinking, somebody say something really stupid, so I have something to write about.
Right. And we've had some, you know, some lawmakers here say some stupid stuff. We had a black city commissioner make the comment that all the white people looked alike. You know, I'm like, why couldn't he say that when I was in the room?
Yeah,
I know. It was, that was like, you know, thank you. I mean, it was a gift from heaven for me, you know.
Yeah. Well, okay, Tom, let's talk about guns now. What kind of guns do you like? What's your favorite carry gun, your favorite long gun? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Right now my carry gun is a Glock 19.
Oh, boy, that's a classic. You can't go wrong with that.
Yep. I before that it was a CZ-75B.
That's what you had in one of your novels.
Yes. I love the gun. It's first time I picked it up, it felt like the grip was molded to my hand.
Yeah, that's nice.
It was just a beautiful piece of engineering. But dang, those things are heavy. They yeah. are heavy.
Yeah.
You do not want to carry one around all day. And I found that there were a lot of times I just didn't carry it.
Yeah.
It just was one of those, I'm just going to the store. I don't want to have to, you know, plus... accessories is something a lot of people don't think about when they're looking at a gun. You got to be able to find holsters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you need holsters if you want to consider putting a light on it. You know, you got to look at that stuff too. And so I decided that I needed a change, and I wanted to go to something that I could get lots of support on with,
yeah.
accessory support.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and did the research that, you know, kind of a lot of it was stuff I already knew, but I wanted to make sure there hadn't been changes. And it was between the Glock 19 and the M&P 9C, the current mm-hmm. generation, the new
sure.
generation. And when I went to the gun store, they had a Glock 19 Gen 4. They didn't have a Gen 5, but I wasn't, it didn't have to be a Gen 5 Glock for me.
Sure.
But the only M&P 9C they had was the older generation, which is a subcompact. I don't like shooting subcompacts.
Yeah, I don't either.
I get why people carry them. I don't begrudge them. I understand it. Having carried a CZ-75B for a while, I understand carrying a subcompact.
Right.
I just don't like shooting them, and if you don't like shooting it, you're less likely to shoot it.
Correct. Yeah,
and,
I agree with
therefore,
you.
You're less likely to train with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I needed something else, and with that, you know, it just kind of made the decision for me. And I don't feel bad about it.
Well, you know, you're an apocalyptic author, and, you know, what better gun to carry into the apocalypse than a Glock, where you know you're going to be able to get spare parts, magazines, you know, a Glock,
yeah.
it's kind of like the Timex of the gun world. It takes a licking and keeps on ticking. So
I usually refer to it as a Toyota Camry of the gun world for
okay.
similar reasons. You know, that just runs forever.
Yeah. Glock is a really nice gun. It seems like people either really love them or they really hate them. But hey, it's a really nice gun. Glock 19 is great. I see a lot of them out on the range. You know, I've got a Glock Model 22. That I have as well. I went with M&P full frames and M&P shields, you know, for my primary carry guns. But I love Glock as well. So, you know, hey, you'll get no crap from me, you know, for carrying a Glock.
Like I said, I was looking at the M&P too.
Yeah.
But they just didn't have the generation I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, if they had had it, it might have been a hard... I might have gone with the 9C.
Yeah,
because the retail is a little less on that.
Well, you know, if we can get more people to buy your books, then you can buy one of those as well. Because you should definitely. I mean, how many guns is enough?
All of them.
That's right.
If I have all the guns, it'll be enough.
That's right. If you have all the guns and a really big gun safe, about the size of a Cabela's, probably, then
I plan on just living in the gun safe.
There you go. All right. Well, hey. Tom, we're
yep.
about out of time, but tell me what is next. What are you working on right now?
Lots more stuff from Bearing Arms. Working on that stuff almost every day. I have the third book in the Tommy Riley Chronicles, the space opera.
Mm-hmm.
about a third of the way done. I just need to get back and get that finished. And yeah. I'm also working on a military science fiction novel. We don't have a working title for it yet, but with an author named Cal Spriggs. He's an Army major.
Oh, okay.
And science fiction author, and we're teaming up on a book. I've never authored with someone before, so that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
We're kind of dragging on that one right now. His military obligations have been considerable lately, and hey, when Uncle Sam says jump, that takes priority over
books. That's right. You ask how high on the way up.
Exactly. So, you know, that's in the works, though, and hopefully we'll have it hopefully by next year.
Oh, that would be good. That would be good. I'm always looking for a good apocalyptic adventure. The problem is there's a lot of them that really aren't that good as far as writing style and plot line. They're kind of a genre formula-based thing, and I'm looking for good literature. And so
yep.
I'm glad that I found you, Tom. I
appreciate that.
Hey, I will definitely, I'm going to be finishing the second book in this series. Anything in the Eden series beyond what you have now?
I do have the next book called Along the Watchtower outlined.
Oh, that's a nice title. I like that.
So I've got to get to, you know, find a time to get that written, too.
I know. It is
it's coming up,
isn't it?
Soon, because I'm starting to get the itch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when hunting season gets close, you start to get the itch. I mean, I've been working on the fourth book in my apocalyptic series, The Blind Man's Rage, for like 3 years now. But when you don't make enough money off of it to just drop everything else and do it, it has to come second, you know, to actually making a living, and people don't understand that.
Yeah, and like for me, between the Bearing Arms and all the other stuff I write, I'm doing between, you know, 3,000 and 5,000 words a day.
Yeah.
Of nonfiction. There are professional full-time writers who only do a couple of hundred words a day total.
Yeah.
You know, I'm worn out.
I know what you mean, because it taps the energy. It sucks the energy right out of you when you're writing, because you're creating something. It's like giving birth. You know, my wife would get mad if you heard me say that, but, you know, it's a little bit like that from what I can see from a distance.
It kind of is. It's more metaphorical, but yeah, I mean, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And when you get done, you're very proud of it, and that's why every negative review hurts.
Yeah.
I mean, on a visceral level, it hurts. It's like a kick in the gut.
I know. I know.
It's like I look at them, and then I'm like, you know, but they don't like my book. And then you got to take a step back and go, well, okay, you know, especially with me, do they dislike the book or do they dislike me?
Yeah.
Because that's a factor, too. You know, you always have to consider, because there are people who give bad reviews just because you have the wrong politics.
Exactly. You know, I can get 100 positive comments. I can get one that's negative, and all I can think about is the one negative, which is just crazy. I'm trying to get over that. You know, we need thicker skins, I think.
Well, I think all writers are a little neurotic.
Yeah.
It goes with the urge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think whatever gene creates that urge also creates a little bit of neurosis in that regard.
It could be.
Because I don't know a single writer who's not a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right, Tom.
Larry Correa does a good better job of hiding it than most.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not familiar with him, he's a real pro-gun writer.
Yeah.
He owned a gun store at one time, for crying out loud. But, you know, he makes enough money now that he can just laugh at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's good. So I just need more money, huh? I just need more money, and then I won't matter so much.
Right. That's what it boils down to.
Okay. Well, hey, Tom, we are out of time now on this segment of the Home Defense Show. But it has been great talking to you, getting to know you at a personal level after reading one of your books. But I want to stay in touch with you, and I want to have you on again. And on behalf of my listeners and my readers, you know, thank you so much for the things that you do with BearingArms.com, because it is important that the news get out there, and you do a very good job
well, I appreciate
doing
that.
Okay. All right, folks, we're going to another two-minute break. Go out to Amazon.com, do a search on Tom Knighton and see what he has there, and then go to BearingArms.com and check out all of his very fine articles. All right, when we come back, I will give you the fourth segment wrap-up and tell you what we have in store for next week. Okay, this is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome to my dad's Home Defense Radio Show. You're gonna love it.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
Skip, it's time for our Armed America Report. What do you have?
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right of the people to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, father-daughter bonding time came to an abrupt end during an assault in Memphis, Tennessee. But the would-be victim had a gun in his car and saved his child from further harm. The dad was carrying his infant out of a fast food restaurant to his vehicle after lunch. Along the way, four men attacked him, despite the fact that he had a child in his arms. During the scuffle, the father dropped the baby. At one point, someone in the gang had the young father in a chokehold, according to reports to a 911 dispatcher. The dad reached his car, retrieved a handgun, and shot one of the culprits. The troublemakers fled in a car, driving to a nearby fire station to get help for the wounded party. The injured man was taken to a hospital for medical care, and all four aggressors have since been charged.
Thanks, Colonel. After being attacked by four men, this young father-daughter combo are lucky to be alive. People need to realize that most attacks are extremely sudden and incredibly violent. We're talking about an ambush situation where the bad guys will almost always have the element of surprise. And in a situation like this, I can't think of anything more frightening than having to fight for the life of your young child against four attackers. But even though this father was ambushed and outnumbered, there is one advantage he possessed that these attackers had not anticipated. This man was fighting for his daughter. And that alone can give a man more determination and drive and strength than he's ever had in his entire life. When I think of someone trying to hurt my family, my warrior mentality goes into hyperdrive. It's kind of like Braveheart on steroids. At that point in time, even though the odds are against you, your mind becomes incredibly focused on the task at hand, and that is to protect the ones you love. Your attackers don't have that edge. All they have is rage, hatred, selfishness, or the need for their next drug fix. But the love of a dedicated and trained parent goes way beyond anything selfish, because the love of a mother or father will always trump the selfish rage of a stranger. There is, however, one thing this parent could have done to better protect his child. His firearm was not readily accessible to him when he needed it the most.
The gun in your car only helps you when you are inside your car. This father had to fight his way to his gun before he could save his daughter's life. But if the gun had been in his holster where it belonged, this whole episode could have been over within 3 seconds without having to drop the baby. Aside from that, this young father did a great job fighting off his attackers, and Front Lines of Freedom gives him a hearty military salute.
And he well deserves it.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Tom Knighton from BearingArms.com. I like him. I think we'll have him on the show again. And I can't wait to see what he comes up with tomorrow for BearingArms.com and next year for Amazon.com with all of his wonderful novels. So, Tom, thanks again for being on the show. Now, here's the part of the show where I tell you what I really think. What is it like to write a novel? I get that question a lot, or people will look at me dumbfounded and ask, how do I do it? Simply because they have zero concept of creating any type of story from scratch. But you know what? That's not really how it works. There's only one person who ever created a story from scratch, and that's the Lord God Almighty. The rest of us writers are just taking up where he left off and using the world he created a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. You see what I mean? All of us are plagiarists to one degree or another. God is the first and last author, and there will never be another one like him. When I write, all I'm doing is looking at the world around me, the one God created from nothing, analyzing what I see, the people, the places, the things, and then I create a story and some believable and hopefully interesting characters. And most of what I create isn't original or made up. Take one of my favorite characters, for example, Uncle Rodney. Some of you know him as General Rodney T. Branch, commanding general of the Shadow Militia from the God Virus Apocalyptic Adventure series. Uncle Rodney is a composite character. That means he's a melding of two or more people that I already know. I think he's about half me, and I'm flattering myself here, and about half a friend of mine. I won't embarrass him by naming him, but he's one of the most interesting fellows I've ever met. Some would say crazy and off the wall. Certainly, he doesn't know or care what other people think of him, but he has to be one of my favorite hunting buddies of all time. When I think of my friend, I'm reminded of that movie Forrest Gump with Tom Hanks. Remember that famous line? Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Uncle Rodney is like that. It's like I know him, but I don't know him at the same time. He's unpredictable, and he says things that surprise me, and hey, I'm his creator. Maybe that's why I love him so much. Uncle Rodney keeps me on my toes, and I really don't know what's going to happen with him. Uncle Rodney is one of the main characters in The Blind Man's Rage, which I'm about halfway through writing as we speak. One of the questions people keep asking me as I write is this: is Uncle Rodney going to die? I wish I could say unequivocally, no way, man, I'd never kill off Uncle Rodney. But the truth of the matter is this, I really don't know. Why? Because even though I'm the writer, I really don't know what Uncle Rodney is going to do. In a few of my other novels, I had the outline and story fully completed before I started to write. Those books were easy to write, but not nearly as much fun. With The Blind Man's Rage, it's not like that. I get up in the morning with no idea what's going to happen in the story, so I just have to take a step of faith and start writing, trusting that God will give me the next chapter. But here's what I've learned. Writing this story by faith is a lot like living my life. I never know what's going to happen when I get up in the morning. Sure, we all make plans and have the best of intentions, but the truth is, it's beyond our control. We can go ahead and outline our lives, but in the end, God is in control and we live our lives by faith. Just last week, I had to kill off one of the main characters in this new novel. My first thought was, wow, I didn't see that one coming. My second thought was remorse, that I'm going to miss the character being in my life. That may sound a bit odd to a non-writer, but here's the deal.
Yes, I know these people aren't real, that I made them up, and they only exist inside my own head. But if I write without feeling their pain, without the possibility that bad things could happen to them, then the story isn't real. When I write, I feel pain and joy and sadness and remorse and loneliness, and sometimes it hurts to be a writer. But the bottom line is this. If I don't feel when I write, then the reader won't feel when they read. And that's why the best literature is so exhausting to write, because it's not fiction while I'm writing. It's real. Sure, after I'm done, then it becomes fiction, but while I'm writing, it's just like the blind man really did murder the lieutenant. It's just like Jackie Branch really was captured and tortured in real life. I see it in my mind's eye, I hear it with my ears, I smell it, and I taste it as I write. And I guess that maybe, just maybe, that's why people like to read stories, because they don't have the ability to feel and hear and think and smell things that aren't real the way good authors can. Because guys like me take the time to write fiction, people like you can pick up a book, can read and escape your own problems, if only for a short while. So to answer your question, how do I do it? I have no idea. I just sit down and start writing, and the words come out. And that, folks, is what I really think. All right. Well, I hope that satisfies you. It probably won't, but that's the best I can do today. I'll keep writing, and I'm sure Tom Knighton will keep writing and giving you all wonderful stories to read. It was a great show for you today. Again, I want you to check out Tom Knighton on Amazon.com. That's Knighton with a K. And, of course, check out Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry book, and the God Virus, all the wonderful stories that I love. Next week on the Home Defense Show, we are going to have two guests. In segment two, we'll have John Correa from Active Self-Protection. We've had John on before. John is going to take a self-defense scenario, and he's going to break it down just like he does in his videos, but he'll do it right here on the air with us, and he will give us the tactical analysis. Then in segment three, we will have Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection, and he will give us the legal analysis of that same self-defense scenario. So you get two different perspectives. Okay. Oh, I'm excited about this week. I wonder if Uncle Rodney's going to die. All I can say is, I hope not. Well, okay, folks, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of the Home Defense Show. Until next week, remember your purpose in life is to find something greater than yourself and serve it. Always remember, God, family, country, in that order. It's important how you live, but it's equally important how you die. Your family and the ones you love need your protection, so train, always train, stay alert, stay alive. Until next week on the Home Defense Show, this is your host, Skip Coriel. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us this week on The Home Defense Show. Now, get out there and protect the ones you love. We'll see you next week with more of the best in home defense.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!